Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter for the St. Louis Blues, Matthew DeFranks. And listen, folks, it's the beginning of the Jimmy Snuggerud era. What do you think, Matthew?
Well, I mean, since we last recorded, you know, you asked the question, are the Blues going to ever lose again? And the answer's been no. The answer's been no, Gordo. So I think, you know, it's a good environment, as we talked about, for Jimmy Snuggerud to come into. And, you know, they're not asking the world of him. They're putting him in on the third line with Oscar Sundquist and Zach Bolduc, giving him some power play time in a position where he's not all that familiar with. He's going to be in the bumper instead of being in the left circle where he typically is to unleash a right-handed one-timer. So they're kind of easing him in, seeing, you know, how it goes. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it's an exciting time to be following the team, just because A, how they're playing, and B, what their reinforcements are looking like. When you have Dvorak up here, you have Snuggerud up here, you have Holloway and Broberg playing the way that they are, Thomas, Kyrou, Bennington. It's a good spot for the Blues to bring up Snuggerud and have some good vibes going.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about the young guys before we kind of get back into the playoff chase, which is still a very exciting thing for the franchise that, going back to January, didn't really seem like it was going to happen earlier in that month. But, boy, you do like the future with you can easily see Snuggerud playing next across from Bolduc and maybe plugging Dvorsky into that 3C spot next year. Right now, Sundquist is doing a good job of holding that position down. But it would seem like puck possessor, protector like Dvorsky with a shooter like Snuggerud with a banger slash shooter like Bolduc would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think the handedness would line up. You had a left wing and Bolduc, a right wing and Snuggerud, and center and Dvorsky. If that kind of can mix in with the rest of the team's profile with the veterans and the mid-20s guys that they have, and you put a line together of a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old, and a 21-year-old, I guess Bolduc would be. It would be a young line, and you'd have to probably protect them, but it would be an exciting one to think about and wonder what could they become or whatnot. And I think, you know, as we go through the final seven games for the Blues, I think there's a chance where you might start to see, I don't know if maintenance or load management is the right word, but, you know, when they had their back-to-back, the other day, that's when they sat Letty, they sat Sundquist for maintenance reasons. And if you're gearing up for the playoffs, if you have an idea that you're going to be in, I realize it may not even be clinched until the last, you know, game or two of the season, but if you're gearing up for the playoffs and you have these older guys that have been nursing stuff throughout the entire season, you know, you get those younger guys in, get those young lads in, give the older guys a break, get them ready for the playoffs, and maybe we even see that sort of Bolduc, Snuggerud, and Dvorsky all together even this year, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
It was a little uncomfortable seeing Matthew Joseph come off the ice after putting the extra time in as an extra guy, wearing the extra guy sweater in practice, and his locker out at Santinas right next to Snuggerud, who's had a media mob there, and Joseph just had to kind of, you know, dump his stuff and kind of start changing a little bit off to the side. He's the guy that gets bumped out initially in all this because it just didn't end well for him in Colorado in terms of his playing time, as you know. So I guess that was one easy move to make, trying to spur him back to where he was to create a little job competition for him.
Yeah, the scene yesterday at practice was probably a rough one to take in for him, you know, like, because you put yourself in his shoes, right? And you just played 21 straight games. We had one shift in the third period on Saturday. You can feel when that's on its way, right? You know, we haven't said this in a while, Gordo, but the ice time, it never lies, right? And so I think when you see the way he was used in Colorado, you kind of can understand or expect something. And for him, he comes off the ice and there's, what are you guessing? 12?
Double figures.
Yeah, 10 to 15, maybe around 12, whether it's cameras, reporters, microphones, recorders, whatever. just all around Snuderud's locker, which is two away from Joseph. And when you have that big of a crowd, it kind of seeps into where he has to sit and take off his skates and everything. So I don't think he really quite enjoyed that. But it's one of those things where we talked about good problems last week, right? Where, oh, well, how do they get Dvorsky and how do they get Snuderud and how do they do all these things? And good problem to have when you have too many options. It's much different than, you know, maybe early on when you didn't quite even know what their second line was going to look like.
I want to talk a little bit about the atmosphere and how it's good for these guys. And I noted on Tip Sheet, I looked at a few other of the long-suffering franchises that over time they ended up just giving up on high draft picks and don't quite work out. You know, I mentioned Buffalo being the worst example with Reinhardt and Eichel and Mittelstadt, and it's just, you know, one after another. Of course, Dylan Cousins here more recently, just guys that never did quite, you know, reach that happy place where they were. The team never got where it needed to get. You look at Philadelphia, they just trade this year Farabee and Morgan Frost. They had Matvei Michkov's a phenomenal player, but you know, he was battling with the coach who ends up getting fired. The coach openly battles with a number first round pick, Cam York, into a confrontation that ends up ending Tortorella's career there in Philly. You see all these other situations where these young guys don't have a great atmosphere. And in some cases, they wash out of the organization. Chicago is another example that's kind of run through some of their top guys. And more recently, now they're trying to avoid that with Connor Bedard. But by comparison, you mentioned, you know, you got these last four number one picks in a good situation, two of them playing right now and two that could be significant pieces next year. And they get to see what winning looks like.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's not the end of the road. I think it's we can, you know, fully judge what they're doing as successful just yet. I mean, I think we can see it's on the right track. We see what Dvorsky's done in the AHL this season, what Bolduc has done in the NHL this season, what Snuderud did in college. I think, you know, we can see the development paths there. But as you mentioned, like it's in Buffalo, when they had all these first round picks on the roster, they probably felt pretty good about it too, until they didn't. So I get what you're saying, but the fact that they don't have to rush them into big roles, I think, is the big thing for me, where you don't have to put the extra pressure on themselves. Like, these are first round picks. These are high performing, high achieving guys that have put a lot of pressure on themselves anyway. That's just the way that players like that are. You know, they don't become one of the best hockey players in the world at 18 years old just by not kind of having those expectations for themselves. So I do think that it's a lot of pressure they already have on themselves, and plus you add in the maybe not the savior you know, tag on them, but you know, asking them to do a lot. And the Blues haven't asked these guys to do a lot. I mean, even you think about Robert Thomas and the way he was eased into the NHL. You think about even Zach Bolduc this year. Like, this year, mostly on the third line, sometimes on the fourth line, sometimes scratched. Sometimes there are times this year where he wasn't on the power play. Like, it's not like he's take they're taking these guys, giving them 18 minutes a night, saying, "Hey, go against these top players on the other side. And we're hoping that you produce at the same rate you always have because that's your first round pick." They just haven't done that to them. And we'll see what the rewards are on the other side, but it seems to be working out so far.
Yeah, you mentioned the you hear the words mentioned over and over again, you know, details, habits, consistency, trying to instill these things with younger guys, and these things are learned over time and through repetition and through the osmosis sometimes of being on a team where that sort of standard has been established. The flip side is you can learn to lose. You can learn bad habits, and you can learn to be you know, inconsistent. And those things can infect a player over time if not corrected, if the team's not corrected. So from that standpoint, at least you're giving these guys an atmosphere where they know what the standard is. They're walking into a team that has established now a standard, and they know where it is, they know what it looks like, they know what it will take. And that's helpful. Even though these guys to this point, like you say, they've all been achievers, they wouldn't be where they are if they weren't. Still, the next level, they're seeing the right type of atmosphere. If you go to Chicago, when you just take ritual beatings, not sure.
Yeah, and I think back to 2 years ago, and this was, I had first gotten to St. Louis, and the Blues were selling off, Tarasenko, Mikkola, O'Reilly, Achary, Barbashev. Like that was that year when they sold off everything. And I remember there was a press conference that Doug Armstrong did. I can't remember what trade it was after, but he said something along the lines of, yeah, it's we would rather our players be developing in Springfield because the atmosphere is much better in Springfield at that point. And it was because they weren't succeeding in the NHL. They weren't playing the right way. They weren't doing things correctly. And to bring up a guy and get those bad habits or bad details, learn how to lose, as you say, Gordo, like that was not the right time. And right now, it's not only that they're is slotted in the correct role, but they see the way that the Blues are playing right now, and they're doing the small things. And every time I ask a player or coach, like, "Hey, like, what's like, as plainly as you can, why is this team different now than it was before the break?" And there are variations, but the core of the answer always comes back to, "We are playing for each other," and that means shot blocking. That means changing at the right times. That means being unselfish. That it's just a whole lot of things that are, I kind of feed into the culture of a room where you see sacrifice, you see hard work, you see all these things, and suddenly that becomes like who you are. You can't be a rookie and kind of upset that. Like you can't come in and not play that way if you're a rookie right now. And you come in and you have to play that way if you're going to be in this lineup and be successful. And that's just kind of the standard the Blues have set right now.
And with their run here, you're looking at what points in 18 out of 20, 9 w wins in a row, the 16 2 and 2 going back to the Chicago win, I think, before the Four Nations breakup. This is pretty remarkable. It's hard. I mean, yeah, they haven't faced the most difficult schedule imaginable, but they have beaten some good teams in here. It's still, you're right in the middle of it, Matthew, but when you step back even a little, if you can, kind of mind-boggling, and the rest of the league's taking notice.
Yeah, and I think the schedule part is a little bit overblown, to be quite honest. Think about the way that the this sport is. If you go into a game, even against the worst team in the league, the odds of winning, if you look at it, whether it's betting markets or predictive models, stuff like that, a lot of times you're going to be looking at like, but 75%, and that's a massive, massive favorite. You say, all right, well, let's say you have 75% one game, and the next game is another 75%. The odds of winning both of those are about 56% or something like that. And then you keep multiplying that by, 9 games in a row. And yeah, sure, they haven't been playing the best teams in the league, but they did play a team that that's chasing them now, Vancouver, a team that was one of the hottest teams in the league in Montreal, a team that was one of the best teams in the league at home in Colorado. And so it's not just the bad teams that they're beating, which they still get credit for doing. Like I still think that the more you see NHL teams, the more you realize that the difference between teams and player to player is not that big when you get to this level of caliber, right? So yeah, they haven't been playing the best teams, but the fact that they're doing what they're doing is still insane. And I've seen some notion that they're just going on a shooting percentage bender, that it's driven by something that will eventually come down. And that may be the case when you think about having scored so many goals in 9 games. I mean, they've averaged 4.33 goals a game. But the other side is like, okay, what if your shooting percentage comes down? Because I do believe that they're at the top of the lead in shooting percentage during this stretch. It comes down, and suddenly you're winning games 3-1 and 2-1 instead of 4-1. Like they're not squeaking by on 2-1 wins with an outrageous shooting percentage. They're going out there and beating the blank out of teams, on the scoreboard, and for the most part controlling games. And even when they haven't controlled games, their goaltending's kept them in it long enough and given them a chance to battle back in them. So yeah, pretty remarkable, I would say, to say the least.
Yeah, their goal suppression and the metrics on that side have all been outstanding.
Yeah, see, honestly, since Montgomery took over.
Yeah, the 5-on-5 play, you've been for weeks now, listeners of Netfront have been reminded that, even when the team wasn't winning, their 5-on-5 play was pretty good. So they fixed some of the other pieces of their game, and Jordan Binnington takes a nod as a 3-star for the month, which is well earned.
And I think so. I mean, you mentioned if you've been listening to the Netfront all year, you've heard some bad stuff from us, right? I mean, remember we got the Four Nations. We were saying, do they really think that they can make the playoffs? Are we really talking about this? And both of us were like, nah, it's then we can move on to next year. So we did get that wrong. We'll admit to that. But I think the things that we can say we got right were that we were banging that drum that their 5-on-5 play, their even strength play had been improved. And it felt so much different from last year after the coaching change, right? Where Drew Bannister had the record and he had the wins and losses, like that was favorable. But a lot of the actual play like hadn't changed, right? And that was the opposite this year. And now the results have kind of matched what the underlyings have said. And part of that is Binnington's improvement, right? I mean, he comes into March and he wins 8 games. That's a great half a season for a lot of guys, to be honest. And so for him to come in, do that, he's been really good. And in the last 5 games, the most goals that the Blues have allowed is 2, and that was in Nashville. They've just shut things down, and when they haven't been able to really suppress offense as much, the goaltenders have been there.
Yeah, and Joel Hofer's obviously played quite
Yeah.
well himself, and which will allow, even though this is win or else time for the Blues, Jim Montgomery has been able to work Hofer in the rotation so that if this team does get to the end and is in the bracket, they Binnington should have some legs left, even though he played in Four Nations, even though he's carried the bulk of the load.
Yeah, and I do still think that that's something that they want to do in these last 7 games. It is crunch time, sure, but it's been crunch time for at least a month now, a month and a half since they got back from the break. And they've still leaned on Hofer a lot. And like they like the fact that they're able to go to either guy and trust them. And like when the Blues get to the playoffs and Binnington starts every game, it'll be the first time, or I guess the second time under Montgomery that Binnington has started 3 games in a row, right? Like this has been how they've done it pretty much all year. 2 Binnington, 1 Hofer. And when the schedule got busier recently, they've been kind of doing some 1-and-1s. But the only time Binnington has started 3 in a row was after Christmas, December 29 against Buffalo, Winter Classic in Chicago, and then back at home against Ottawa. That's been it. And like this coaching staff, led by Montgomery, has kind of gone away from just trusting Hofer on back-to-backs. I mean, because you can see the difference. I'm looking at it right now. When Bannister was the head coach, Binnington 3 in a row in October, Binnington 3 in a row October, November, Binnington 4 in a row in November, and then Binnington 3 in a row right before Bannister got fired. Now, that's 4 instances right there. Whereas when the Blues get to the playoffs and it's Binnington for every game, that's going to be just the second time under Montgomery that they've been able to do that. So I would imagine throughout the rest of this regular season, they'll be leaning on Hofer to keep Binnington particularly fresh.
Yeah, and Montgomery is on a couple of occasions hasn't been shy about switching in game, and typically he won't throw the goaltender under the bus or whatever, but he's done that as well, and why not when you got a guy like Joel Hofer?
Yeah, and I think the other part about this is if you look at the Blues schedule, they finish on April 15 at home against Utah. That's the end of their season, but the end of the NHL regular season isn't until Thursday. So, and the playoffs aren't expected to start until Saturday. Saturday, April 19 is the date that the NHL has been throwing out on all of their releases when the teams clinch games. And so you already look at it and say, okay, That's a decent break from a Tuesday to a Saturday. You have some time to recover. And then the other part is that on April 19 in Winnipeg, the arena's already booked. I don't know if they can move a concert that they have already booked there, but if the Blues do end up in Winnipeg, unless they move this event, they might be looking at a Sunday start on April 20. And so that'll be a long, long layoff from ending a season on a Tuesday to starting the playoffs on a Sunday. And that would be in case of Winnipeg. I guess I can look up the Vegas events and see kind of what theirs looks like. But yeah, for them, they also have an event on April 19, the WWE. They have
I'm moving that.
WWE. They have WWE on the 18th and the 19th there. And on the 21st. So, it's looking like the 20th would be a start in Vegas as well. And so if that's the long layoff, then you do have some time for all your guys to rest and relax.
Course, you still have to get there, Matthew. So this push has been interesting. The Wild is a well, that's a scrappy team. They play very hard. They've had so many injuries, yet they compete, and so they manage to claw into overtime and pick up a point. We were talking about what kind of the how what an enigma New Jersey is, but Minnesota got a point on that. They got a couple more games back east. The team hasn't been a great road team, but it's a little. I mean, the trends are all in the Blues' favor as far as them the Blues getting to that next spot up the ladder. I wouldn't just write off Minnesota just yet. I know they've been through a lot. They're not the same team. They'll be better as they get, I think, closer as they get healthier. But I have admiration for how Minnesota's had to deal with all that they've dealt with. And yeah, they banked all those wins early, but I'm not writing them off just yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it right there. Once they get healthier and they have Kaprizov back and they get Erichsenek back, they're going to be a better team. Like Kaprizov is a heart level talent, right? Like that's what he played at earlier this season, and without him, I mean, it's a lot of Matt Boldy and a lot of Marco Rossi and Brock Faber, but the Wild aren't that scary team that you would really think about when Kaprizov would be in the lineup or when Erichsenek is in the lineup. So those would make a big difference. And but if they don't get him back till it's too late and the Blues keep rolling past him, then that's good for St. Louis and bad for whoever has to face the Wild with Kaprizov coming back or a really hot Blues team. Suddenly the wild card spots aren't looking as much of a pushover. I mean, even think last year, Vegas came into that eight spot and Dallas gets him in the first round. This year, you're going to have either the hottest team in the league in St. Louis or a wild team getting back one of the best players in the league. Congratulations for winning your division, either Winnipeg or Vegas or even Dallas if they get close enough to Winnipeg. So I guess that's the other option we didn't look at. I didn't look at the Dallas arena schedule and see when they would
Yeah,
start
no,
here.
it's that team is absolutely capable of getting to that top spot. Man, and boy, would you not want how about facing that team as loaded up as they are and getting the kind of years they're getting, Robertson being back to being more like Jason Robertson, hence having a that supporting cast there, Duchene having a great year that you bring in the Moose to play with that group. Man. I mean, yeah, they've taken some beatings. I'm not sure, but with Heiskanen, and that was a tough blow on the back end. But still, man, that team has something.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now they've won six in a row and they'll be getting Sagan back. They'll be getting Heiskanen back. So I think there was some concern over the way that they're winning games. They were using their goalies a lot and kind of getting by that way. But they just went into Seattle and won beat them two times, which is, not a huge thing, but six games in a row, definitely of note. And American Airlines Center, wide open in April and May. So the Stars finish on a Wednesday, so I would imagine they start on a Saturday at home.
Yeah, we'll look at the Canucks. Do you think there's talented team, been through a lot this year, didn't fold, but didn't get real hot either. They've scrapped out some points in some tough situations, but just don't really sense there's enough push there. Is that kind of what you see?
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of sounding like a real doofus, that's I think the eight in the West are, I feel like they're kind of there. I mean, yeah, there's a possibility that in the last seven games the Blues cool down a little bit, but Calgary, they're what, 5-3-2 in their last 10. Same with Vancouver. Utah, they're gone. I don't know. I see, Calgary, and they're 5 points back with nine games left. So it's not an insurmountable, deficit, right? That's not too crazy. Vancouver is six back with eight games to go. So I don't know. I look at the lead that the Blues have right now, the way that they're playing, the way that Calgary is not playing as, I mean, they've pulled some rabbits out of hats, right? But the fact that they're not making a heavy push, in my mind, the eight are kind of there. And if you look at some of the predictive models who have a lot more smart people working for them, the Blues are about like 85% on Money Puck, and on other predictive models they're around 70-85%. So big heavy favorites at this point to make the playoffs. Now we'll see. We'll have to just sit here and find out. I mean, they can pass Minnesota tonight.
Yeah, a couple games this week at home, and in particular the first couple games here, can really move this thing into a direction where the teams chasing could become dispirited. You know, that's the thing too, because those they look at the standings, they see the Blues just may never lose again, and that's got to take a toll. I mean, these teams have not given up that are chasing, and normally these teams would be playing well enough to stay into the end of the playoff. But how often does a team come along and get points in 18 out of 20? How often does a team win 9 in a row? That was out of the playoffs to do that.
Yeah, the only one I could think of in like recent memory was Nashville last year, when they went on that real heater, where they was it like a 16 game point streak or something like that after the U2 concert got canceled. Yeah, they had eight game win streak, finished with a six game win streak and points four games in between, so 18 game point streak. So that's the closest comp that I got for you. And they finished the season, let's see, 1-4, 3-7, 3-7 in their last 10 games. And then of course we know they lost in the first round of Vancouver. So that was a scary matchup that a lot of people like, oh, you don't want to face Nashville, they're really hot. But then they went 3-7 down the stretch. So if the Blues can at least not go into that sort of nosedive at the end of the season, I think you can feel good about how they will perform in the playoffs. Maybe not that they will win, but how that they will perform and not be, you'll see what you've seen recently, which is they'll show up, they'll play well, and most times they'll win the game.
Well, Braden Schenn was asked again for the umpteenth time, whether this run is reminiscent about with the 19 run, and there's some similarities, of course, with the coaching change in season, the late push when things look bad, for sure. And there's like he points out, five guys left from that team, so it's a different group, but there are some things that are similar: the guys playing for each other, the vibe, the collective will, that sort of thing, the momentum, the culture, all those things that have come together, that elusive X factor that most teams can't find in a given year. Some teams do, and though some teams have a chance. But the other thing that's interesting is that they found their hook, right? They found their mascot, and they found their gimmick. They got, and it's and it seems to be all part of team building. A little different than Gloria, thank God, because we had enough of that song. But fun nonetheless.
Yeah, so they got two bits going on right now. One is when the TV camera comes into the dressing room before the game, the player who they go up to and zoom in on and see them tying their skates, that player just stares at the camera, just unflinchingly stares at him. This was something started by Alexei Torbchenko in Minnesota. And I talked to him after practice yesterday, and he was basically like, yeah, I've always wanted to do it. And I think they were coming to me after I scored in Pittsburgh. And so I just did it. And the guys were laughing and they were having a good time. And then the next game, someone else did it. And then someone else did it. And, you know, it was funny because, you know, Buchnevich comes back in the lineup in Colorado on Saturday. So the TV camera goes to him. He sees it happening. He's putting his pants on. Jake Neighbors is sitting next to him. So he puts his pants on, he sits down, and then he kind of leans in and goes, leans in right at the camera and stares right at it. And I tapped to Neighbors yesterday and I say, how are you not losing it when you're sitting next to him and you see him just kind of flip the switch and go into character, just staring at the camera? And Jake goes, yeah, I'm used to him kind of being an idiot, so it's all good. I'm kind of used to that. So that's the one bit that they've been doing. And then every player who's done it has, you know, either they've had different styles of stares too. You know, you have the one where you're trying not to laugh. You have the one where you're being the cool guy, kind of leaning back and looking at it. You have the real intense, intimidating one that the Justin Falk, I think, has gotten credit for. Jim Montgomery even gave Dylan Holloway some grief this morning. He said Holloway's wasn't really that good. So you have a lot of different styles of them, right? So that's one thing. And the other one, Gordo. Jobu.
Getting some FaceTime cameras were all about that in the dressing room, getting close-ups of the mascot.
So here's the thing. Jobu arrived sometime after the break. I don't know exactly when. I haven't been able to nail down a date. The earliest that I saw him was after the Seattle game in February. That was when I first noticed him in the dressing room. He had his own stall. He did not have a nameplate at that point. But he had his own stall, and then he came on the road. He was in Washington. That's when he had his own nameplate. He had his own stall there too. And for those who, I guess, are probably younger than me, I think I might be maybe part of that last generation that has actually seen the movie Gordo. This is from Major League. Jobu, you know, Pedro Serrano was a member of the Cleveland Indians on that team, and Jobu was the guy that he worshipped. Is that fair to say, Gordo?
His icon, yeah.
His icon. So there's a figurine of Jobu, not a bobblehead, very clear, not a bobblehead. He's a figurine that's in the dressing room. They take all everywhere, and he's kind of taken on a personality of his own. You know, I've been asking players the last few days what his personality is like, and they've been saying, you know, he's a real quiet guy. He's got a presence about him though. And Jordan Binnington was saying after the game in Colorado, you know, they're really inspired by Jobu's second intermission speech, really got him going. And the fact that they're winning games, they're having such a good time doing it, like this has allowed this to have its own little life of its own. And another Jobu fact, he's in the team picture this year, Gordo. So the Blues take two team pictures. One is with the players and the coaches and the equipment managers, whatever, like that core group of people that are around the team every single day, on the road, at home, whatever, like that group of people. And then they take a larger picture with everyone in the organization. So that includes, you know, ticket sales or, you know, whatever, other parts of the organization. They all bring them out, they're in their suits and ties. And they come out and they take a picture around the team. And it's in that second picture, that organizational picture, that Jobu is being held by Bruce Affleck front and center. Bruce Affleck is literally sitting between Shen and Parayko, and he's holding Jobu in between. So Jobu is part of the team picture. He's got his stalls on the at home, on the road. He's kind of taken on his own life, on a life of its own. And it's one of those things that whenever I ask the players about Jobu, kind of finish up and I say, have you seen Major League? And to this point, I don't know if one of them has. You know, they'll say, oh, no, I haven't seen it. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Well, we'll have to have a team outing to maybe book a theater to show the movie to bring the boys in, or maybe if one of the rich guys has a home theater, they could have the crew over to see it for sure. So, well, there you go. They have everything going for them, and they've got their spiritual leader in the presence, the stoic, the calm yet the ferocity of the of Tobias. It's very, very, it's awesome. So there you go, folks. That is the net front for this week. A happy net front, talking about some kids, talking about the spiritual leader of the team, the winning streak. We'll see if it keeps going. Until next time, a reminder that you can get all the coverage of the Blues, all the extra videos, the podcast, extra content on the digital edition of the Post-Dispatch over at stltoday.com. If you're probably on there right now looking at us, Matt and I, so we appreciate that. Thanks for supporting local journalism. Until next time, for Matthew, I'm Jeff. See ya.